brushed her hair over her shoulder and stood straight for the inspection of the guard. I was wheezing, my hands on my knees. The guard also inspected me, a small sardonic smile on his face, before running his eyes down to the end of our procession.
"Go on in,"
he announced, jerking his head to the side and moving out of the way. This was it. I was stepping into what would be Emmy's home for the rest of her life, and what would be my home for probably about half a sun cycle, maybe even an entire sun cycle. All I needed to do was stay far away from fire, tar, sharp things, pointy things, serrated things, hot things, breathing things, living things, and sacred things. I paused, my feet stalling, my eyes flying wide. We had stepped into a courtyard with multi-hued stones underfoot and a giant ancient peary tree standing in the middle, breaking up the cobblestones with thick, papery white, gnarled roots. I figured that it was twice the size of the ancient peary tree back home, and that there were several more that I could see, spread around the winding cobblestone pathways leading between academy buildings. It wasn't the tree that had surprised me, though. It was the guy tied to the tree, and the guy standing before him, holding up a crossbow. He was blindfolded, and the guy tied to the tree was laughing. They were clearly souls because they were bigger than normal dweller men. Bigger even than what I would have expected of a soul. The one tied to the tree looked just a little older than me, his bright eyes sparkling with laughter. I wanted to draw closer, to see the color of his eyes, or to confirm that his hair actually was the stunning meld of golden black that it appeared to be from this distance. He glanced over as the dwellers behind us also came to a stop, and he started to laugh even harder.
"Turn!"
he shouted. The guy with the crossbow raised his arm, aiming the bolt directly at the other's chest, before slowly turning. Turning to face us. Jareth made a groaning sound, but nobody did anything to stop the crazy soul. He had the same golden tarnish to his hair as the one tied to the tree, though it was more golden red, and his skin was a shade more tanned. He was also built like he tore up trees from the ground for a fun hobby. The blindfold over his eyes seemed to mask his face more than just his eyes, but I could still make out the infinitesimal smirk twisting his lips.
"Stop!"
the one tied to the tree shouted. The crossbow, and the guy holding it, paused. The bolt quivered, and everyone turned to stare at me, because it was now pointed directly at me.
"Don't mind them," Jareth consoled, taking a step back.
"Are you seriously saying that while you move away from me?" I hissed out quietly.
"Those are the Abkurse brothers, or two of them anyway. Cohen has a gift for pain, and Sirit has a gift for trickery."
"The one that has a gift for pain, is he the one holding the crossbow by any chance?"
"Yeah."
"Really?" I groaned, even though my heart was kicking up a riot inside my chest, and my eyes were fixed to the annoyingly still crossbow bolt. I didn't even last one step into Blesswood. As the words left my mouth, Emmy kicked out a leg, knocking me into the ground. I felt the air brush past my face, something tugging against my hair, and then I heard the telling thunk of a crossbow bolt embedding itself into the wooden gate behind us. A gate that had obviously been nudging shut at some point to protect the dwellers congregating around the entrance. I stared at the bolt, my mouth dropping open, my brain short-circuiting. And then I looked back to Cohen, who had ripped the blindfold off and strolled forward a few steps. He had bright green eyes, smoking to a dark color around the edges of the pupils, and I now noticed that the color of his hair actually bled a deep, burnt red, with only a few golden strands. He glanced down at me on the ground, frowned, and then wandered away, resting his crossbow over his shoulder. Sirit, who had been left at the tree, struggled out of his ropes, jumping over the base of the tree and sauntering over to us.
"Dear little dirt dwellers," he sang, raising his arms and grinning as the gate creaked open again. "Welcome to Blesswood, and to the beginning of the rest of your lives. Try not to get in the way of my brother when he decides he's bored." "Or when you decide you're bored," Jareth muttered beneath his breath.
Sirit walked the rest of the way over, holding his hand out to me. I didn't want to take it. I really didn't. Emmy cleared her throat, though, her eyes full of panic, and I quickly grabbed his hand. He hauled me to my feet with far more ease than was really necessary to display to everyone, and I accidentally stomped on his foot.
He didn't seem to notice. He brushed off my shoulders as I tried not to get distracted by the green-gold tint of his eyes. They were lighter than his brother's, but just as stunning. Did all souls have such stunning eyes? He almost had you killed. Right. His eyes sucked. He had sucky eyes, and so did his brother.
See you around, rocks,
he said, sweeping his gaze over me before turning and jogging down the path his brother had taken.
Rocks,
I managed, as the guide started ushering the other dwellers inside again. Everyone was trying pretty hard to pretend that nothing had happened, but I could see the nervous expressions on their faces and the sympathetic looks they shot my way. They were wasting their energy. Shit like this happened to me all the time. Maybe not on a Sacred Soul of Blesswood almost murdering me for no reason whatsoever scale, but close. Emmy was chuckling beneath her breath, which meant that she had worked out my nickname. What? I nudged her. You dropped like a bag of rocks. It wasn't that funny. I scowled. Chapter 3. It was a somber, sweaty crowd that made its way the last few yards into the inner domain of Blesswood. Our first introduction to the gifted souls had been enough for all of us to realize that shit had just gotten real. Really real. Being a dweller in the village might be a lowly, unfortunate life, but we were all pretty equal there. Here, we would know every single sun cycle that we were the dirt beneath the blessed feet of the blessed souls. Dirt dweller. Punching a soul in the nose was probably frowned upon in Blesswood. I reminded myself to check the rule book on that one later, right after I learned how to punch. I should probably just stick with tripping and kneeing them in the groin, since it was one of my specialties. Maybe I could throw some tar on them. I was pretty sure that Sirid and Cohen wouldn't be so confident if they had to shave off all their pretty hair.
Follow me,
Jareth demanded, his voice loud enough to be heard over our panicked and rapid heartbeats.
There's no time to settle in. You'll find your bunk, dump your bags, and get your assigned dorms, classes, and other duties. These were all decided long before you reached Blesswood, by the Dweller Relations Committee, so don't bother arguing. You won't get reassigned unless a soul requests it. No special circumstances.
Well, great. What were the odds I pulled washroom duties for the rest of my life? Maybe being sacrificed to the gods wasn't the worst thing that could happen here. I focused on sucking up as much of the surrounding beauty as I could, before I was stuck cleaning urine pots and bowing down to souls. The main room of this particular building was huge, with a dome-shaped ceiling. There were these scattered panes of glass, which allowed trickles of sunlight to wash down the marbled white walls and pillars. There didn't seem to be much in the actual room, furniture-wise. It appeared to be a central point, leading to a bunch of other buildings. Jareth, who had somehow slipped into leader mode and was definitely letting the power go straight to his head, was waving everyone forward.
Hurry up! There's no time for your slow village backwardness right now.
We were roughly ushered through a small, dark archway, which somehow ended up in the corner of the beautiful building, and then down some dark wooden stairs. I could see the staircase also went up, but apparently they wanted us as far from the gods as possible. Jareth's voice drifted back through the narrow stairs.
This is the Dweller's Stairway. You'll use the back stairs to move around Blesswood as much as possible. The souls like their privacy. They want things done right, but without having to see or smell you.
I decided that chatty leader Jareth was my least favorite of all the Jareths. He was so much more fun when he was silent and spraying souls with street water. It was dark and kind of damp in this section. I preferred wide open spaces and less elbows in my ribs. Also, the sweaty nerves thing was really starting to become an olfactory problem. The soul should probably cross off the not smell us thing. That just wasn't going to work. Finally, after climbing down 4,000,050 stairs, we reached the dweller section. There was no natural light in this part. We were clearly far, far underground.
Did anyone tell them about things collapsing on me?
I whispered to Emmy.
Someone should have warned them.
She shook her head, before her hands snaked around to cover my mouth.
We're one floor down, Will. You're going to be fine.
One? Was she insane? Those stairs had been never-ending.
Female dorms are to the left, males to the right.
Jareth was actually waving his hands now. Whatever chill he'd been channeling on the way here was long gone.
I'll be waiting for you back in the main foyer. You have until the bells ring for next class.
He was gone then, back up the never-ending stairs. Emmy was in the mood to get shit done. She had her arm around my entire middle this time, and was barreling through all the poor dwellers who thought they were getting first pick of beds. From what I saw in our dash through, it looked like the dweller's underground bunker was a small, dull room. Rocks under our feet, and above our heads. Real homey feel to it, what with all the dust and lack of natural light. Are all the dwellers here? I asked, trying not to breathe in the secondhand air. There was nothing fresh down here, that was for sure.
Nope, this is just for the newbies, although there are always a lot of newbies. Souls aren't very gentle with their playthings.
Emmy hadn't answered that time. Someone else knew things too, which lowered my need to ever learn. I was good with that. I swiveled to see a petite girl with a huge mane of bushy, dirty blonde curls. She was doing well to keep pace with my manic best friend. Her huge azure eyes gave her face a cute but slightly weird look. She seemed friendly enough, though.
So, where do the dwellers who last longer than a life cycle go? I asked.
Emmy had told me on the way over that we would be considered recruits for the first life cycle, and after that, we would become resident dwellers.
Creepy, I thought.
Hi, I'm just a resident dweller. I'll be waiting down here in the dungeon if you feel like some tea.
Anyway, using that information, it made sense that we'd be stuck down here for that long.
Another building, the girl answered. To the east of the Academy Estate. I heard it's also underground, but slightly nicer. My cousin was here for many life cycles. She now serves in Soldal.
We were in the female wing now, and it was about the same level of awesome as the previous room. Just add in 20 or so small boxes masquerading as bedrooms. Emmy was dragging me toward the boxed room closest to the door, when I dug my feet in and pointed toward the name tags on the small edges above the doorway. It said Janelle Brown and Sam Sunil.
I think we have to find our names, I said tentatively.
I recognized her mood, so I was treading lightly. She actually growled then, like a weird forest cat growl.
We need to be near the entrance so that we don't miss any calls.
Right. That was my first thought also. With a huff, I was dragged along each of the cordoned off rooms, until finally Emmanuel Knight came into sight. There was only one name above her door, which was odd. It looked like the two chosen names from each of the villages were rooming together, except for those who had a male and a female. With a shrug, I followed her in, glad to see that there were two beds in the tiny box. Guess they forgot about me. It happens. This was the start. I could feel it. The start of Willa Knight ceasing to exist at all. A metallic tinkling sound broke the silence around us. It was a dull noise, like it came from far away. Back up the million or so stairs, I was sure. Emmy's face went deathly white. She shot-putted her bag across the room, and I watched as it slammed against the wall before falling to the tiny bed on the left side.
Was that really necessary?
She cut me off.
The bells! It's the goddamn frickin' bells!
I hate this place,
I groaned, as she pulled her leg out and used her foot to nudge me toward the door.
Seriously, Emmy, did you just kick me?
Why aren't you moving? Why is your stupid bag filled with stupid pots still in your stupid hands?
I lunged at her, tickling her in all the places where she was most vulnerable, which was every place with exposed skin. She was the most sensitive person I knew when it came to tickling.
You need to chill the hell out,
I demanded, while she snorted and fought off my hands, trying to stay mad. I swear to the gods, you look like you're 40 life cycles old right now. Footsteps sounded outside our little box, and I knew that Emmy or Jareth would actually kill me if we were late to our first assignment. So I straightened my clothes, dropped my stupid bag on the other bed, and followed my best friend from the room. I remained quiet and demure, not voicing my many opinions on what a shithole it was that they had us shoved into. I thought this was supposed to be an honor. I'd have preferred to stay in the village, if anyone wanted to know my opinion on it all. I hadn't stayed because I wouldn't leave my sister, but it was still my preference. I'd give Emmy something. The trip up the stairs did seem a lot shorter than going down. We emerged from our rat hole in the wall, and since I expected to see Jareth standing there, hands on hips, I was astonished enough to trip and knock down 15 or so dwellers, because there were 3 souls waiting for us. The dwellers who tumbled with me jumped quickly to their feet, all of them looking around, trying to figure out who had knocked them down. I was doing it too, looking around with a confused expression on my face, because survival was kind of important. The three souls stepped forward, moving just a little closer to us, and I found myself caring less about my tripping and more about how shiny these people were. There were two men and a lady. The female was in the center, dressed in shimmering white, her dress floor length, demonstrating how slim and tall she was. Her hair was bound in golden curls, her eyes dark, stormy gray, scary and exotic, all at once. I couldn't look away.
"Welcome, dwellers," she announced coolly. "I am Elowin, the head of the Dweller Relations Committee here at Blesswood. You are honored to be here this sun cycle, to serve the souls and the gods."
We are honored? Was this speech for real?
"We only allow the best dwellers in all of Manatsul to attend our souls in Blesswood. Dwellers who have demonstrated their intelligence, skill, grace, and discretion. You speak to no one of what goes on inside these walls. You are not to be seen or heard. You do your job right, and you will be rewarded. After you spend 7 life cycles here, you will be offered a position with a family of worth in Soldel, Dividel, or Tridel. This is your future. Don't mess it up."
The men were clearly her pretty arm candy. The one on the right, a brunette with longer hair that he had tied at his nape, started handing out sheets of parchment to us. We all knew how to read. It was one of the few things the villages made sure every child could do. Read and write the common language. Each ring had its own dialect, but everyone spoke the common language. The language of the gods. It was a timetable, schedule, and assigned job list. I ran my eyes over the list, noticing that Emmy had library and kitchen duties, as well as classrooms 325, 2010, and study hall 8. She also got the female dorms 10 through 15. I searched for my name next, hoping that I would at least be close to her. They were going to have us working for the entire sun cycle, every sun cycle, and I was already fearing that I would never see her again. Finally, I found it. Way past all the girls' names. Will Knight. Oh, crap. Made sense for my curse to screw me like this. I was assigned to arena and training duties, classrooms 246 and 2213, study hall 8, and male dorms 1 through 5.
"I guess that explains the name on the bedroom, then," Emmy said, her face drawn as she clenched her fists tight around the paper. "They think you're a boy."
"But..." Emmy shushed me.
"Just take it, Willa. They said you can't ask for any changes. This is all preordained by the gods."
I snorted, unable to keep my voice down. "Actually, this is preordained by our idiot village leader who was probably too drunk to notice when he filed my name in wrong."
"It's no big deal."
Emmy was lying through her teeth now, trying not to cause a scene, as Elowin split us up into two groups to tour the grounds, sending the boys off with one of her henchmen, and the rest of us off with the second.
"Just borrow some clothes from one of the male dwellers, maybe a hat too? They probably won't even mention the fact that you look like a girl because that's super rude."
"Rude like, I don't know, shooting a crossbow through my chest?"
"It didn't go through your chest."
"I think it snagged a few hairs. From my head, I mean, not from my chest." I trailed off, because one of the girls hurrying along with us was giving me a strange look. I blinked, momentarily stumbling over my own feet as something else occurred to me.
"Damn it. Boobs, Emmy. I can't pretend to be a guy. What about my boobs?
Or is it rude to mention that a guy has boobs, clear as the sun, standing right there?"
"Will!"
Emmy was catching my arm every few steps now, because I couldn't seem to keep my footing with all the excitement. And by excitement, I definitely meant terror.
"Can you stop talking about boobs, please? We're getting weird looks."
"Oh, yeah," I drawled. "Change the subject. Real smooth, Emmy, real smooth." She rumbled with that chilling forest cat growl again, making me shut up. Okay, so maybe she was right. I couldn't change the dorm assignment, but maybe the souls would request to change themselves after discovering that I was a girl.
"And this is the dining hall,"
henchman number 2 announced to the group, pushing 2 heavy doors apart to give us a glimpse into the massive hall with floor-to-ceiling windows and heavy velvet curtains. There were bronze chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, with so many candles stuck into their brackets that I was sure they had to be a hazard of some kind. Most likely the fire kind. Dozens and dozens of circular wooden tables were spaced apart around the room, with a long bar of empty aluminum dishes stretching along one wall, a kitchen area barely visible behind it.
The final prep kitchen is on this level, allowing the souls to request certain dishes outside of the set menu each mealtime. But most of the work is done below, in the basement kitchens. No recruits are allowed in the basement kitchens. Resident dwellers only.
He backed away from the doors, letting them fall shut, and then proceeding to drag our group from one end of the academy grounds to the other. We also toured the female dormitories and the bathing chambers attached to the ends of each dormitory corridor. I could only pray to the gods that the male dormitories were set up in a similar way. But that was kind of futile, because the gods had allowed me to get assigned to the male dorm in the first place. Correction. They didn't really allow it, so much as they just never paid any damn attention to me in the first place. I mean, I got it. I did. I wasn't that important. I was just a little dirt dweller with a little danger sign hovering over my head. Why would the gods bother to watch over me, unless it was for entertainment? Oh, my gods. Emmy! I bounced up from her bed, the one we had collapsed against as henchman number two allowed us a short break after the touring. Do you think they do it deliberately? Who? She blinked, her head snapping up, her eyes flying open. She hadn't fallen asleep, apparently. She jumped up with me, finding her feet, her eyes darting about wildly. What? Who?
The gods.
The gods what? Do you think they do this crap to me deliberately? All the accidents? Emmy groaned, her posture deflating as she sank back onto the bed, her hand wiping down her face. Damn it. Well, of course they don't do it deliberately. Why the hell would they do that? Well, they're supposed to love the souls fighting against each other. That's why they come down to the arena every moon cycle to watch them battle, right? So what if they're making my life hell just to laugh about it? She sighed again, but this time it was a pity sigh. She grabbed my hands, pulling me down onto the bed beside her. Well, just stop thinking about it, okay? It is what it is. We can't change it, so we need to live with it. I know this whole... She shook her hand around, indicating the stone walls surrounding us. Situation has shaken you up a bit, but the gods definitely aren't making you clumsy just to amuse themselves. If they really wanted that kind of entertainment, they'd be doing it to the souls. We're just dwellers. It'd be like poking ants just to see them scatter. It's really not that entertaining, certainly not for 18 life cycles on end. I opened my mouth to answer, probably to say that she could call herself an ant if she really wanted to, but I was totally an eagle, or basically anything cooler than an ant. But I wasn't afforded the chance, because the bells were ringing again. Free time is up, Emmy unnecessarily announced. Henchman number two had told us that we would be expected to attend the dining hall for the commencement celebration that night, in the presence of every soul at the academy. Apparently, they had a feast at the beginning of every academy life cycle, and the new dweller recruits were one of the main attractions. Emmy was staring into the tiny oval reflection glass stuck to the wall between the two single beds, fussing with her hair. She would have changed, too, if she hadn't already been wearing her best clothes. I waited until she was done before moving over to the reflection glass myself and peering at the image of my own face. It was an okay face, kind of like Mum's. I had naturally pink lips and naturally flushed cheeks, probably from the adrenaline of almost dying all the time. My eyes were a brown that seemed strangely translucent in most lights, the kind of brown that reflected other colors. It wasn't at all odd for a person with blue eyes to think that mine were slate brown, or a person with green eyes to think that mine were mossy brown. I didn't really see all those different shades and highlights that the other people mentioned. I thought they were tawny. Tawny brown eyes. Plain and simple. I also had tawny skin. A golden brown from having spent far too much time outdoors. I was lucky that I didn't also have tawny brown hair, or else I'd probably be blending into walls and trees. My hair was similar to Emmy's. A white blonde, with a scruffy curl to oppose her sleek locks. It was also a little darker, with less silver. I pulled all of my hair back from my face now, slapping a hand over my forehead to see what I'd look like in a cap. Not bad, I muttered. But there's still the boobs. Okay, we're leaving before you start talking about that again. Emmy led the way, taking us through the many corridors and back into the dining hall. The souls were already seated at their tables, indicating that we were probably late. But I was really good at being late, so I took Emmy's arm, dragging her for once. We plastered ourselves to the wall, moving along the line of other dwellers toward the middle of the room, where it would be easier to see all the tables. It wasn't until we were properly stationed that I noticed the group of dwellers hovering out in front of the kitchens, a few souls standing in front of them. I recognized most of their faces, because they were the other dweller recruits. Crap! We were standing with the resident dwellers.
"Welcome, dirt dwellers,"
one of the souls shouted, even though he was only standing a few feet away from the first line of recruits.
"Welcome to our city, welcome to our academy, and welcome to the commencement ceremony. Now, strip."
"Wait, what?" The demon soul laughed, his head thrown back, his dark gold onyx hair tussled perfectly around his face. Was that? He looked exactly like Sirit, except that I could see Sirit standing right beside him, wearing the same clothes as this morning. The trickery gifted soul had a twin? I could tell them apart, but the twin thing was clear. That wasn't good. That definitely wasn't good. But what was worse was the fact that the recruits actually appeared to be stripping. The seated souls started laughing, a few of them jeering rudely, and one of the resident dwellers next to me sighed.
"Why do the souls find this so funny anyway? Why can't Yale think of anything better to use his persuasion gift for?"
I had no idea who the guy was talking to, but I decided it wouldn't hurt to let out a matching sigh, lean back against the wall, and fold my arms casually. I know, right? It's getting old. And don't even get me started on the twin thing. One of them is enough, am I right? The guy snorted.
"Yeah, and five is overdoing it, just a little bit."
"Five? Five? Holy fu-" "I feel sorry for who's ever assigned to their dorm rooms," I whispered back, applauding my even tone.
"It'll be one of the recruits,"
my new friend informed me, lowering his voice even further and leaning my way.
"You know, it's been absolute chaos in here since they turned up a few moon cycles ago. They've had 20 resident dwellers assigned to them already, but they dismiss them like it's in their schedule to get a dweller fired every few weeks. After the last one, Elowyn announced that she'd start assigning them recruits. You wouldn't know that because you aren't one of the slaves attending the Dweller Relations Committee. I know, because I am. Anyway, I guess she thought that if she gave them someone fresh, they'd be able to mold them however they wanted."
"Sounds creepy. So, is Elowyn giving them special privileges?"
"They're the most powerful souls here. You didn't know that? They're future gods."
And on that note, Emmy broke into our conversation, leaning over me to glare at the guy.
"You two should really stop gossiping about them."
"Sorry," I muttered to the guy, after pushing Emmy back. "She hasn't eaten yet." He chuckled.
"No problem. I'm Addie, by the way."
"I'm Willa, and my grumpy friend here is Emmy." Addie shook his head, his short curls jumping around a little like they were trying to escape his head.
"Why haven't I seen you two around before? I know Elowyn keeps us locked down in service to her, but I thought I'd cross paths with most resident dwellers by now."
Before I could fess up to my mistake in our recruit status, a commotion across the room stole all our attentions. The recruits, who were now wearing no more than underclothes, were dragging themselves out to stand in the center of the room. They were being paraded around. The two almost identical demon souls, Sirit and Yale, remained standing at their table. Just standing. Smug, arrogant assholes. They had these half-smirks on their faces, like they were enjoying the discomfort of dwellers, feeding on it even. Their huge bodies seemed to grow even larger, the perfect planes of their faces deepening. The shimmers of gold which tinted the darkness of their hair was stronger, almost as if they had this inner light which was shining brighter. I was starting to see the gods in training thing, to really see it. There was nothing dweller in these souls, no matter what the history said of the origins of the gods and souls. "Why does no one stop them?" I murmured, my feet shifting. I had to force myself to remain against the wall. I couldn't stand to see others humiliated like this. It was different when I was humiliated. I was used to it. I could handle it. They couldn't. They had once been the brightest, the smartest, the most honored amongst their own people. And now, all of a sudden, They were less than garbage. Addy answered.
The teachers tend to leave souls to deal with things themselves. They don't monitor them outside of lessons. They say the gods are always watching, and that usually keeps most of them in line.
Except for the Abcurse brothers. Clearly they weren't worried about the gods and their spying eyes. I tilted my head to the right, my gaze catching on Emmy. She started shaking her head frantically at me.
Don't you move, Will. Don't move a freaking muscle, or I will kill you. Drawing the attention of any soul is a bad thing. Drawing the attention of those five sounds like it'll be catastrophic.
She had a point, but I was a pro at catastrophic. With that in mind, I took a deep breath and stepped off the wall. Chapter 4. No one noticed. No one. Where was my clumsy curse when I needed to make a scene? I had no idea what to do short of stripping off my own clothes and running naked through the gaps in the tables. But how could that help the shaking recruits out there? Just as my hands went to my shirt, fists clenching the sides, another short, tinkling bell rang out, and the scent of food drifted in through a set of now-open doors. Sirit waved a hand then, and the room shifted. I blinked twice to make sure I was seeing things clearly. How in the hell? All of the recruits were back against the wall, fully dressed. It was as if none of the last few clicks had even happened. My mouth was open. Like, right open. A damn flying mantis could have walked right in there with no problem. He tricked us, I muttered, managing to speak around my shock. As if he had heard my words, Sirit shifted his body in my direction, and those shimmering golden green eyes slammed against me. Hard. Now someone noticed me? I was grabbed from behind. Either Emmy or Addy yanked me back against the wall, probably trying to save my life. If Sirit or his brothers retaliated to my tiny attempt at making a stand against dweller abuse, well, it would probably be the second time this sun cycle those Bolson balls would try to kill me. How many times would it take for them to succeed? A line of resident dwellers brought forth the soul's dinner, looking completely oblivious and unaffected. I braved a glance from under my lashes, and managed to breathe deeply when there were no jewel-like eyes staring in my direction. Like most men, the Abcurse demons had one true love. Food. Emmy kept two eyes on me for the rest of the dining time. No other humiliation was dished out for the dwellers, if you discounted the normal shitty way they were treated. Trays thrown at them when the souls were done eating, barked orders for more drinks and food. Mutterings about dirt dwellers and their ineptitude at all things. All things. The recruits were supposed to observe this first dinner, learning everything it was possible to learn before being expected to dive right in for the next dinner. Thankfully, there were plenty of other resident dwellers who stood with me and Emmy, waiting for a summons. Not all of them had active duties in here, so we didn't stand out. Right up until I heard a shout.
Hey, Rox, we're gonna need some help over here.
I froze before slowly defrosting enough to face Emmy.
What should I do? If I ignore them, will they come over here and kill me?
I was whispering frantically under my breath, trying to make myself as small as possible against the wall.
Are they talking to you?
Addy asked, his voice going a bit high-pitched at the end.
What is Rox? Why are they singling you out?
Great freaking question. What the hell did they want with me? Come on, gods. This just isn't funny anymore.
Are you deaf, Rox?
I let out a little shriek before plunging forward and headbutting the hard chest of a soul that had appeared to stand before me. I hit him with a solid thud, but his body didn't even shift an inch. I, on the other hand, was shot back against the wall, where I crumbled like a bag of, you guessed it, rocks. Looking up through messy hair, I knew I was staring at one of the Abcurse brothers, but not one I had seen before. He was golden. There was no other way to describe him. Rich, golden hair, the color of the sun as it crests the sky in the early morning. His skin was also sun-kissed, his eyes like newly cut topazes, the yellow jewel which was mined in the fourth ring. He was prettier than his brothers. Like, really freaking gorgeous. No shiny soul would ever compare to this one, and that made me very wary. He grinned at me, displaying his perfect white teeth, and there were suddenly all these warm feelings around my heart. Like happiness had sprouted throughout my body and was spreading like a weed. He offered me his hand, and I knew from the gasps along the line of resident dwellers that he was paying far more attention to me than a soul normally did to a dweller. Ignoring it, sure it was a trap, I pulled myself up and pressed back against the wall. The soul reached out then, dropping one of his hands against the wall.
No need to throw yourself at me, sweetheart.
His low, lilting words drifted into my ear.
If you ask nicely, I'm sure we could sort something out. Why don't you give it a try? My name is Eros.
Go ahead.
Say, please, Eros.
Before I could stutter out some asinine reply, a voice cut across the room.
Hey, seduction, get your ass back over here. We don't need rocks anymore.
Sirit dismissed me as the rest of the souls laughed like it was the funniest thing any Manatsal inhabitant had ever seen. Eros drew back, his smile dimming to a half-smirk.
Guess I'll see you around, dweller.
Then he was gone, taking all his warmth and energy with him. I sagged against the wall, chest heaving in and out as I fought for air. Addy turned sympathetic eyes on me, his brow creased as he dropped a hand briefly on my shoulder.
I'm really sorry, Willa. Those five are trouble, and any dweller who catches their eye hasn't lasted very long in Blesswood. As soon as they turn their attention to one of us, they make it their mission to destroy.
He trailed off, seeing the look of horror on my face, and then tried for something a little more supportive.
If you can manage it, stay as far from them as you can. Don't let them see you, and they'll eventually get bored and turn their attention to someone else.
I didn't reply. I was still trying to catch my breath. His advice was great. Someone just needed to tell my clumsy curse and the gods, because they clearly weren't done amusing themselves with my misfortunes yet. Emmy remained quiet, choosing not to mention the encounter as we dragged ourselves back to our dingy little dweller cave. She was trying to be considerate, because she knew me well enough to know that I definitely didn't want to analyze what had happened. She asked me once if I was okay, and I grunted out a reply. That was the extent of our conversation for the night, and I quickly fell onto the second bed in her room, even though I was pretty sure there was a room in the male dweller section with Will Knight written above the door. I pulled the blankets over my head, screwed my eyes closed, and forbade the Abkurse brothers from haunting me until sunrise. The next morning, all dweller recruits were up with the sound of bells, indicating first light, which, of course, we couldn't see from our concrete tomb.
When did we pull night duty?
I asked Emmy as we quickly dressed. We didn't exactly have uniforms, but the requirement was plain colors and a modest amount of coverage, so as not to offend the souls with our dirt dwellerness.
You're on call for your dorm rooms at all times, she said, pulling on her black top, which had long sleeves and hung almost to mid-thigh.
She took off before I could demand to know how they planned on finding me at all times, and I tried not to take it personally. Emmy didn't deal with stress very well, and whenever I got into too much trouble, she always went silent, drawn into a private little crisis on my behalf. Wait, at all times? Were there restrictions? What if they needed me when I was in the bathroom? What if more than one of the rooms needed me at the same time?
Deal with it later, I murmured to myself, slipping on my flat boots.
They were the only pair I owned, but they were of the highest quality. They had been handcrafted by my mother, before she decided that leather work was a waste of her time, and that it'd be more productive for her to spend her sun cycles exploring the tavern instead. I had expected Leader Graham to pull her up many life cycles ago, since there was no room for those who were without skills to exist in the village. Everyone must pay their way. Everyone must provide. She managed to get away with it, though, and I hated to think about what she might have exchanged for her special privileges. Still, I wondered how she was doing without Emmy and me. I wondered if she'd even noticed yet. A yearning for home sank into my body, filtering through my blood and into my bones, settling in with permanence. I had to accept that I'd never go back. I knew that logically, but emotionally, being at Blesswood still didn't feel real. If Emmy hadn't been there, I'd have probably started thinking about escape by now. I'd have taken my chances on the road through the Nine Rings and made my way back to the village.
Will, hurry up! The next bell is about to ring and you haven't eaten yet.
Emmy's voice cut through my moment of sadness, indicating that she was actually waiting for me at the end of the hallway. I sprang into action, my feet tangling in the bedsheets I hadn't bothered to put back up on my rock-hard bed. It had been so narrow and uncomfortable that early this morning I'd ended up on the floor, which is why I was now tripping over the sheets and flying through the air. I tumbled out of the open doorway, the stone floor biting into my skin. I heard a deep sigh above me, and by the time I stared up, a bandage had appeared in Emmy's hand. It took her a click to patch up my elbows and quickly stitch the hole in the knee of my black pants. A new record for her. The bells tolled again, and we started running. I managed to snatch up two pieces of hard bread from the almost empty tray of food, which sat on the table in the main recruit's room, shoveling the tasteless cardboard into my mouth as I hurried after my friend.
"You need to attend to your dorms first,"
Emmy breathlessly informed me as we ran up the stairs, taking them two at a time. It was a miracle that I didn't crack my skull open at any point. Which reminded me, I forgot the cap to hide my hair, I mumbled around my breakfast. Swallowing it, I took a moment to run my hands over my head. Shit, my hair wasn't even pulled back, instead hanging in a mass of scruffy white blonde curls. My hair is out, and the boobs, Emmy, I didn't wear a top to hide the boobs. My top was white, for freak's sake. White and fitted. It was actually my usual sleep shirt. I'd been too busy agonizing to change properly. I might as well have just stepped out naked. Emmy grabbed my hands, pulling them from my hair before she started dragging me in her now familiar way.
Don't worry about it. The Souls have early training in the arena, so none of them will be in their rooms. If you pass any, just keep your head down and hopefully they won't notice you.
Before I could protest again, she was gone, dashing across the domed room, heading east toward the female dorms. We knew the layout from our basic tour the previous sun cycle, but it was easy to lose direction. Everything looked so similar. I did at least remember where the male dorms were. The path lay to the west, on the opposite side to where I was supposed to be cleaning. Supply carts were located at the beginning of the sleeping quarters, which meant that I had nothing to hide until I got there. Wrapping my hair up in my hands, I quickly swirled it around and then tucked it into the back of my shirt. That was the best I had. I took off with my head lowered, my eyes constantly moving to make sure no soul crossed my path. The long hallway I traversed had massive floor-to-ceiling windows on one side, which gave me an uninterrupted view of Blesswood. It was a huge estate with multiple buildings. There were also all the trees, plants, and water features, which, to be honest, still kind of freaked me out. So much water everywhere. What did they do with it all? Why couldn't they share it with the villages who were desperate for more? A male dweller pushed a cart past me, and I could see his double take at the female on this side of the building, but he didn't stop to ask me what I was doing. Luck was on my side, for once. The souls in my assigned dorms better request a dweller change. The tension would kill me otherwise. The long hallway opened to a room that jutted over the grounds, giving an uninterrupted view of the Sacred Sand Arena, a massive circular open-topped stadium. I paused for a beat, taking in the grandeur of it all. I knew a lot about that building now. I knew that souls with gifts for barricades would put a roof over it in inclement weather. I knew that it could seat 20,000, and that there was a special boxed area up high for the gods. I even knew that on occasion, original gods would grace the souls with their presence and watch the battles. There were always some secondary and minor gods there, of course, but the originals were the big draw card. So yeah, I now knew more than I'd ever expected to know about the training stadium, courtesy of the overachiever who always slept next to me. What I didn't know was the point. How did battling, sometimes to the death, show the gods anything of real worth? Why would the original gods want to recruit the strongest souls in Topia? It always struck me as odd that they would invite the very beings who might be strong enough to overthrow their positions. The very beings who might end up more powerful than they were themselves. What evidence did the souls even have that they would go to Topia when they died? There was so much faith going on in that scenario, and frankly, the gods didn't seem the type to throw all your hopes at. Footsteps shook me from my thoughts, and I turned from the view and continued toward my dorms. There was a cart sitting outside the storage facility, and it looked to be well-stocked, so I grabbed it. It would save me having to waste more time when I was already late. Eventually, the dorms came into view, a door on either side of the wide and well-lit hall. The number started at 500, and started working down. Of course they did. I would expect nothing less than to be assigned the furthest possible rooms. I sucked in my sigh, tucking my chin to my chest while I pushed ahead with my card. If there was anyone in my path, they were going down. They'd have to get their asses out of the way, or else. Luckily, I didn't encounter anyone, and I made it to room number 5 without incident. I didn't bother to pause and check the name. I didn't care which spoiled sacred soul resided within. Not unless they were going to write me into their will and leave me a bunch of tokens when they died so that my mother wouldn't have to. Best not to think about sex for token favors so early in the sun cycle. Save the hard thoughts for after lunch. I knocked on the door, waiting a few moments without an answer before pushing inside. Wow, these rooms were even nicer than I had expected. Tall, rippled glass windows displayed a warped mirage of the mountainside past the arena, to the back of Blesswood. I didn't actually know what was beyond the academy, beyond the mountain. I left the cart at the door, stepping over scattered clothing and dropped books, passing by the massive bed, with ornately carved matching bedside tables. I passed it all without blinking, reaching the glass and walking alongside the windows, my fingers traced the rippled surface. I followed along the entire length of the room, ending in a small attached sitting room, separated from the bedroom by a stone archway. Shelves lined the walls, two stuffed armchairs facing the glass. Glass which wasn't rippled anymore. I gasped, stepping into the room and pressing both hands against the window. Beyond the mountain was nothing. Miles and miles of nothing. More mountains, tipping and reaching, piercing the skies with uneven peaks, some of them even appearing white-capped. There wasn't even a discernible road weaving through the mountains. I felt my nose bump against the glass and knew that my breath was fogging it up, just the same way the mist was fogging up the base of the mountains in the distance. I'd never seen anything like it. Anything so vast and empty, all at once. It was technically nothing. No more towns, cities, settlements. But it was everything. It was beautiful, and proudly formidable. That was where I belonged, in that place of unforgiving, empty terrain. But for now, there were beds to be made. I pulled away from the window, rushing back to my cart. I actually had no idea what to do. We'd been given our assignments, but no real instruction to go along with the assignments. I supposed most dwellers knew how to clean properly, though, because most dwellers weren't me. I hurriedly made the bed, punching the shape back into the pillows, and picked everything up off the floor. I didn't know where to put any of it, so I just tossed it all onto the freshly made bed. There were a bunch of big cloth bags in my cart, with labels for me to put on each bag, so that made laundry easy. There was even a list stuck to the top of the cart, something that I only noticed after moving the basket of supplies that had been covering it. The locations of the laundry rooms assigned to each hallway of the dorms were listed, along with room numbers of resident dwellers tasked with ordering new supplies. I finished the first 3 rooms in record time, but I was slowing down by the time I got to the 4th. I'd suffered 3 stubbed toes, 1 near concussion, and an accidental rag to the face, because apparently jumping up and down and tossing a wet rag at the glass wasn't the best way to clean a window. My shirt was damp with sweat and soap. My hair kept dragging into my eyes, and the hole in my pants had reopened. I was starting to wonder how I was going to survive a full sun cycle of this, let alone a lifetime career of it. I didn't bother to knock on the door this time, because Emmy had been right. The dorms had all been empty so far, the souls obviously having arena practice. I pulled down the handle and turned around, pushing the door open with my butt while I walked backwards, dragging the cart, since I'd lost most of my strength to push it in front of me like a normal person.
"No, it's fine. Come on in,"
a deep voice drawled, making me freeze. I had a moment where I thought it would be a good idea to pretend that I hadn't just waltzed into someone's dorm. To pretend that I hadn't clearly heard them admonishing me. To pretend that I'd had a sudden, unexplained change of heart. I slowly started pushing the cart forward, instead of pulling it backwards. I didn't stop until the door closed behind me. And then I just stood there, my internal organs threatening to explode with panic. The door swung open behind me. A hand landed on my shoulder, an arm shooting out beside me to grasp the handle of the cart. And before I knew it, both myself and the cart were back inside the room, and the door was shutting behind us.
"Wrong room,"
I squeaked, keeping my eyes fixed on the door. Maybe if I didn't look at him, he wouldn't look at me, and then he'd just forget my face and I'd never be punished for this.
You mean wrong hall, maybe?
He asked, walking away from me. I still didn't turn. Instead, I just listened, really hard. I couldn't tell where he was standing anymore, but I could sense that he was still there somewhere. Well, obviously, because he didn't exactly jump out of the window.
Dweller?
Will you reassign me? I blurted, spinning around, and immediately wishing I hadn't. He was sitting on the end of his bed, and he appeared all too familiar, with glittery green eyes smoking to black around the very edge of the iris, and messy textured hair, colored in a meld of blood and ochre.
Reassign you?
He asked, with an arch to one single dark brow. He wasn't quite smiling, but he was obviously amused. Why me? Was all I could think. Why? Why? I swallowed carefully. Another Abkhurst brother. The last one. He looked just like Cohen, the pain-gifted soul who had tried to kill me. They both appeared slightly older than the other three. Yale, the persuasion-gifted one, Sirit, the trickery-gifted one, and Eris, the one who apparently had some kind of seduction gift. I didn't even want to imagine what kind of soul I was now standing alone with. It was too much for my minuscule little mind. I was going to have a breakdown and start screaming obscenities at any moment. He stood then, because I obviously wasn't uncomfortable enough. I stumbled back a step, my eyes stretching even wider. He was huge, massive, like a freaking giant, or a mini-giant, at least. Cohen had been big, too, but this was something else. Cohen looked like he tossed trees around for fun, but room number two looked like he ate trees for breakfast. You don't happen to have a real happy sunshine gift, do you? I stammered, falling back another step. Like flowers or butterflies? I was forced to let go of the cart. The cart was now on its own.
You mean like nature or bestiary?
He corrected.
Because flowers and butterflies aren't a real gift.
Yeah, right. Nature or bestiary, except bestiary still sounds scary, so scrap that one. Just nature. Is your gift nature-related?
No.
He grinned, his teeth flashing, his cheeks dimpling. Mind momentarily blown. Aren't you supposed to be at the arena? I was mostly just keeping him talking now so that he wouldn't notice me backing toward the door.
They don't let me train with the others. I keep crushing them.
So, that's your gift then? I squeaked. Crushing? I couldn't really believe I was having this conversation with a soul alone in his bedroom, let alone having this conversation at all without a whip cutting across my back. His smile disappeared, and he jumped into motion, backing me into the door much faster than I had been backing myself into the door.
Strength,
he whispered, pressing a body against me that kind of felt like a giant boulder, or a brick house, or maybe a stone mountain.
Strength is my gift, dweller, and I'm not going to reassign you, so start cleaning.
He was off me instantly, pulling the door hard enough to send me sprawling on the ground. He then slammed it shut hard enough to knock the broom off my cart. It hit me in the back, of course. Strength, I mocked, picking myself up off the floor and kicking the broom away.
Clean my room, slave, or I'll crush you like a bug because I'm a big, strong soul.
I was working myself up a bit. I realized that. I just couldn't seem to prevent it. Yanking the door open, I leaned out and peered down the corridor. I was pretty happy to see that number two was nowhere in sight, because I definitely would have tried to kick his ass, and definitely would have ended up in someone's soup come morning. I glanced to the top of the door, on the outside, reading his name. Room two. Rome Abkhurst. I pulled the rest of the way out of the room and moved to room number three. Eris Abkhurst. With a feral-sounding growl catching in the back of my throat, I glanced at the other two rooms that I had already cleaned. Yale Abkhurst and Sirit Abkhurst. I didn't even bother looking at room number one. I knew what it would say. My luck was just that bad. Cohen Abkhurst, a.k.a. Painmaster of Blesswood, the guy with the crossbow. Motherfuck. I paused, my tantrum on the verge of spilling out, when a dweller pushed out of room number eight, his cart pulled behind him. He blinked at me, his mouth falling open, and I recognized Addy.
You're a recruit, he accused, his voice a hiss as he moved closer.
You're a boy, I returned, A dose of horror shot into my tone. My finger raised in a point. What are you doing in the girls' area? He had a moment. He totally had a moment. I could see it all over his face before he realized that he'd just finished cleaning the rooms that he always cleaned. And then confusion descended.
What are you doing in the male dorm?
Exploring my sexuality. I leaned against the cart, propping my elbow, wiping my expression into something neutral. How am I doing?
I can see your nipples. Your shirt's wet.
My elbow slipped, and I almost toppled over, but my chin caught me against the edge of the cart.
I knew the boobs would be a problem, I groused, rubbing the pain out of my jaw.
I knew it. I tried to tell her, but she wouldn't listen to me.
Who?
Emmy, remember? Grumpy Emmy?
Oh, yeah. She looks kinda uptight.
She's not.
Really?
Okay, maybe a little. Do you have a shirt I can borrow? Maybe a cap? Maybe some pants? And a fake mustache? He laughed, glancing down the hall before looking back to me.
You seriously got assigned to their dorms?
Yeah, the leader of our village gave me a boy's name on the form. Think they'll reassign me?
Probably.
He stroked his chin, trying to hide his growing smile.
With those five, you can expect a reassignment at some stage.
Like, when, exactly?
When they're done playing with you, given that you're still alive. I'm in room 17, in the dweller residence. Come and find me once you're done. I'll lend you some clothes.
Thanks, Addie. I'll put in a good word for you with the big boys, I promised, jerking a finger over my shoulder to the dorms behind me. His smile stretched, taking over his whole face.
Try not to get yourself sacrificed,
he warned, pushing his cart away. Chapter 5. After I finished the Abcurse rooms, rushing through the last two like my life depended on it, which it almost definitely did, I found myself sneaking into the dweller residence with Addie. He'd finished his dorms at the same time as me and decided it was safer to show me where to go, rather than leave me to my own devices. How did he know me so well already? Maybe he was just smart like that. Smart like Emmy. Smart like every other damn dweller in Blesswood. Maybe I was the only stupid person there. Their permanent dweller residence was set out much the same as the recruit side, but they had one window and a few squishy-looking daybeds. I paused at a small structure filled with games and books.
Books? I laughed. For all your free time, I guess.
Addie gave me a sympathetic smile.
Once you're promoted to resident, you'll get one sun cycle off per moon cycle. We're expected to spend that time learning of the gods and the gifts of the souls, so that we may increase our chances of success.
Wouldn't it just be easier for us to plot all of their deaths, since they have to die to get to Topia? They'll know their exact chances. I trailed off as his face went a sickly white color.
What?
I looked around, afraid that someone had busted me in their residence. Addie shook his head in this manic back-and-forth motion.
Don't even joke about that, Willa. The gods are always listening here in Blesswood, and the souls would take any threat against their person seriously. You never know when a dweller might be acting under the influence of a powerful soul. Sometimes they're happy to just act as spies and saboteurs, even if it will get them killed, because they think they're serving a future god.
I forced my face into sober lines. No worries. I'll keep all my plans for mass execution to myself from now on. He swallowed hard, seeming unsure if I was kidding or not. That made two of us. With a shake of his head, he hurried off toward dorm 17, rushing inside and throwing things around to find me some clothes. I waited in the doorway with my arms out as he piled things into them. He was a lot taller than me and really skinny, so Emmy was going to have to work her needle magic and fix a lot of these up. But at least I was going to attempt to look male.
And finally, this cap will work to cover all your hair. You have a lot of hair.
Well, thank you. I was taking that as a compliment. Not very much hair seemed like an insult. My arms closed around the pile of dark clothing, and I hugged it closer to my body.
Run now, Willa, he said, giving me a shove out of his door. You have to be at breakfast shift in 5 clicks.
Did they ever stop rushing? We barely ever used our timepieces in the village. Our schedule ran on shouts from Leader Graham's advisors out into the center, where our old statue and well were located. But here, it was all bells this and clicks that. The sun was a pain in my ass. It never stopped moving, always making me late. I took off, clipped my elbow on the side of his door, and shot-putted all of the clothes and my own body across the room and into the wall of the dorm next to Addie's. My head hit with a decent thud, and my vision was a wash of color, and then darkness, all at the same time.
Willa, holy hell, you can't even walk? How in the gods did you get chosen for Blesswood?
Rolling over with a groan, I ran my hand across my forehead.